From the home of the Codebreakers and the birthplace of modern computing, this is the Bletchley Park podcast.
Welcome to the February 2021 episode of the Bletchley Park podcast. Oral History Special, number 2. Hello, this is Mark, the podcast producer. We're still in a national lockdown here in the UK, but it's been quite a busy week for the podcast. We managed finally, Erica, David, Thomas and myself, to have a virtual online meeting. And I can tell you now, we've planned out the whole year of podcast episodes. We've got some great It Happened Here episodes to bring you. We will be bringing you our second part of our listeners' questions and answers. But with that one, we all do need to be in the same place. So obviously at the moment, we can't do that with lockdown. But as soon as we can, we will bring you that. But one of the other things we decided was that, as we did with last year's lockdown, we're going to bring you some extra content again. So for at least the next couple of months, we'll be bringing you a new episode every 2 weeks or so. These are going to be a mixture of these oral history specials, but also our regular content as and when COVID restrictions allow us to start recording again. Now, in case you are new to the show, last year, we featured short clips from dozens of our veterans telling us what they did on VE Day and VJ Day. In these oral history specials, we can bring you the longer versions of those interviews, allowing our veterans to tell their own story in their own voices and in their own way. So in this second oral history special, we're going back to early 2020 in what would become one of the last interviews carried out just weeks before the pandemic. Our oral history officer, Jonathan Byrne, and his colleague, Will Hankey, sit down with GC&CS veteran, Tim Edwards. Previously, we heard what Tim got up to on the day war ended in Europe, and now we can bring you much more of that interview. Tim reminisces about how the discovery of an eyesight problem suddenly stopped his training to be a pilot in the RAF and landed him at Bletchley Park working on German Air Force codes.
I'm Jonathan Byrne from Bletchley Park Trust, and I'm delighted to be interviewing Mr. Tim Edwards, and I'm accompanied by my colleague, Will Hankey. So, over to you.
Well, just how I got there, I was at school at Clifton College in Bristol. When bombing started on Bristol in, I suppose, 41, they decided that they would evacuate the school. And so I had been a day boy living in Bristol in my grandmother's house. And the school was evacuated to Bude in Cornwall. We occupied half a dozen hotels and I had my education there. Left school in July 43 with a place at Oxford waiting for me. And went into the RAF. We had an ATC, an air training corps, at the school, and I took part in that and had been aiming to become part of air crew. Went to various preparatory places for air crew when I was actually sort of called up, if you like, and that was in August 43, and after a short spell teaching us how to march and so on, really important things in a war like that. I was sent to an initial training wing at Newquay in Cornwall, and in January 44, went to flying grading school, which means initial training, actually flying. That was at Elmden in Birmingham, which had the distinction at the time of being either the only one or one of very few airfields where you approached landing and takeoff clockwise or anti-clockwise, depending on the wind direction, which it's important to remember which way it was going for the day concerned. I did 8 hours there. I didn't solo. So I was sent to a holding unit in Manchester at Heaton Park, and we were awaiting dispatch to Canada, or as it was then, Rhodesia, for completing our training. It looked as though I was going to be a pilot, but it didn't work out like that, because at one point I had trouble with my eyesight. This is in March 44 now, and I had retrobulbar neuritis, which they thought was a warning that I might be getting multiple sclerosis, which wasn't a very good idea for me as aircrew. So they downgraded me smartly after I'd spent some time in Glen Eagles Hotel, which was converted from being a hotel into an all-services hospital. I felt I was physically fine, apart from the fact I couldn't see very well. It's important to see if you're going to be a pilot. Yeah. Anyway, I was downgraded medically, but on the grounds that I had been properly educated, if you like, and one of my subjects was German, what they then called higher school certificate. I was interviewed in London at an Air Ministry building, and after an interview, they said that they would be sending me on to another post, and eventually I arrived at Bletchley on August the 1st in 44, and really had very little training at all. I was sort of taken with others who were new at the time to Hut 54, where a man called Bennett, of whom I have no details, but a civilian who was in charge of the hut. It was called German Air. And I was primarily concerned with weather reports from the Balkans. And our job, which I must have been very bad at, I think, because I have very little recollection of any kind of notable success in doing it. But what we had to do was we were given intercepts, which consisted of groups of digits. And we had to try and make sense of these and see if we got any repetitions, and gradually built up some sort of picture. I seem to remember one of them was a QMR, was an indication of the state of weather at German airfields in the Balkans. And there I spent a very happy, safe, interesting, stimulating year. And it was all extremely pleasant. I made many friends there. I don't think my contribution to the war effort was anything but negligible, if as much as that. Do you want me to stop at that point?
Well, no, that's fine. If you don't mind, a couple of questions have arisen as we've gone through. And what you've been saying is great. I mean, that's good, because
yes,
you're saying without me having to sort of keep...
I'm used to talking.
Right, that's fine.
Stop me.
Oh, yes. At the interview, did they give you any hint about what they were interviewing you for?
Well, there was clear intimations that it was secret, that what I was doing was not to be spoken about. And, of course, we had to sign the Official Secrets Act. But apart from that, no, I had no warning. I mean, I was just sort of thrown into Bletchley Park and go to Hut 54 and get started.
And that was the other thing. You said Hut 54. Now, we think we know all the huts and things at Bletchley Park, but 54, it doesn't sound like a Bletchley Park hut.
Ooh.
Ah, photograph.
Well, in this book, she talks about Hut 54.
Oh, right.
I think that would be right.
Well, we'll have a look. Yeah, that's great.
That photograph was taken. The people are identifiable, and I don't know if you need them identified.
It mentions Vernon Watkin.
Yes. Vernon was the only one who had a camera, and I took that picture, and he then took a picture with me in
yes.
it,
ah,
in
right,
his
yes.
place.
Yes.
When Gwen Watkins was writing her book, she wanted the photograph, obviously, with Vernon in it,
yeah.
but could only find the one with me in it. And that is where your thumb is.
Oh, yes. There. Oh, wow, yeah.
I'm the one with smoking a pipe.
Oh, yes, yes.
And on the right.
Yeah. Oh, that's worth remembering.
And you can see there's a sort of gap there, which is another photograph taken on at the same time.
You've just left. Fascinating, yeah.
I did have a copy with me in it, and there's a story there. How much time have I got?
No, as long as you
All the time you want, basically.
All right. Yeah. Well, I will digress for a moment. But we moved into this house in 91, and I got to know various people, and I retired from being head of Boys Comprehensive School in Barnet. I was head there for some 20 years until I retired in 84. Well, Christmas 83. Anyway, so we moved here in 91 when I was already been retired for a few years and getting to know the place. And I was bored one evening and decided I'd go and give myself some exercise and wandered round, past a house with the light on. And I peeked in because I don't know whether I must have known her already, but I don't think I'd been in the house before. And seeing them all sitting there, I sort of knocked on the window and invited myself in. She was a person called Monica King. I can't remember what she said. She had been at Bletchley.
Right.
And had that day bought a copy of Gwen Watkins's book.
Yes.
And being a generous-hearted person, she said, well, borrow it, you know, by all means. So I brought it home and showed it to my wife. And she was sort of flipping through it. I was doing something. And she said, it's a photograph of you. And it was really quite an astonishing coincidence, though coincidences are not always as astonishing as they might appear. Anyway, it was through her and because of my appearance in this book that I decided I would follow up my acquaintance with Gwen Watkins, who, as Gwen Davis, I had known as a sergeant in the WAF, who also worked in Hut 54. There's a mystery about this hut. I don't understand it, really. I can't remember, except that those were the people I worked with and knew well.
I think some of these names I recognise from our records.
I'm sure you will. So, I'm sure you will.
Seem familiar.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
And we worked distantly, but sort of vaguely under Josh Cooper. I mean, I didn't have any contact with him at all. I was a tiny drop of oil in an enormous and complex piece of machinery, and I was only there for 13 months. And as I say, my contribution was negligible, but for me, fascinating, because I met a lot of people who were, you know, literate and articulate, most of them, all of them, I think, graduates. I couldn't guarantee that. I think most of them were all graduates. And, well, at Bletchley, apart from the day job, I got involved with various other activities. And in this book, she, Gwen, mentions an occasion when she's describing, I don't know whether you've come across the name of Vernon Watkins.
Well, through her book. And
yes.
Yes, mainly, yes.
Yes.
But he was a poet, wasn't he? And
he was indeed a poet. Yes, yes. He was nominated for Poet Laureate, but didn't get it. Was a great friend of Dylan Thomas.
Yeah,
yes.
Remember that, yeah.
As I say, I knew Gwen as Gwen Davis, and surreptitiously, I think, I'm not quite sure how surreptitiously, they got married. They weren't supposed to get married, to other, well, I don't know whether at all, but anyway, to other workers at Bletchley, at BP. But anyway, they did, they got married, and I kept in touch with them through Vernon. There was a, unfortunately, I've got no copies of them that I can find, but we took turns to compile a sort of, I don't know, it was monthly or circulated newsletter, keeping people together who had known each other as, and were friends and acquaintances. So I kept in touch with them for a few years. I lost touch with Gwen. I was pretty busy from 61. I spent 10 years at Manchester Grammar School teaching, and then lucky enough to be appointed as head of Queen Elizabeth's School in Barnet, which was a grammar school at the time, and spent 10 years at a grammar school there. And then we became comprehensive. And I was on the education committee as a co-opted member, as a teacher to the education committee in Barnet. And having been myself interested in the comprehensive concept, I stayed on. I thought, you know, if I had advocated comprehensive education, I should stay and see it through. So I did, and I spent another 10 years building up a comprehensive school, converting it from a grammar school to a comprehensive school. And all this time, I had nothing to do with Bletchley, of course. Yeah. But I met people, various people who had been there. And it was surprising how many, in fact, I did meet, partly through Peter Hilton and people he knew, whose names I don't think I shall be able to retrieve at this distance. Anyway, that's my story. Yeah. I don't know where you want to go.
Well, I think just a bit more detail. And I appreciate it that I'm asking you to talk about things over 70 years ago you were told to forget about and never talk about. So I don't expect 100% answers. But you said you met a good, interesting circle of people at Bletchley. Were they mostly the people you worked with?
For the most part, yes. Yes, they were. Not all, but the great majority. Yeah.
Because we're always led to believe that you knew the people you worked with, maybe you worked with, but that was about it.
Oh, yes, and you mustn't say what you were doing to anybody else except the people you were working with and whilst you were working with them. It was made pretty clear that you shouldn't talk shop when you were off duty, even if you were in Bletchley and talking to another fellow. I was a computer sergeant, by the way, in case, so you need to treat me with considerable respect. But I think they spelt computer with an O.
So I believe, yes.
In those days.
Yes, we've seen occasionally we've been sent copies of the service records of people like yourself, and it's computer, which I believe was the RAF term for what we now call cryptanalyst.
Yes, that's right.
Of course, computer came to have another meaning later on, as we know. Yes. And did you work a shift system?
I don't have any clear recollection of that. I've always enjoyed my sleep. So I think I would have remembered if we had done. Yeah. I don't think we were. Yeah. Our work was, I mean, we dealt with various intercepts through Enigma. And I remember seeing with surprise a document headed Top Secret Ultra, which was my first experience of where we were at. No idea what anybody else did. Hardly got near the main building, Bletchley House.
Mansion.
Yes. I think I was introduced to it when I arrived at Bletchley and sort of briefed as to where I should go and where I should live and so on.
So were you living in the RAF camp just outside the the gates or the top?
Yes.
Yes, yeah. And what was that like? I mean, can you give a sort of description of what it would look like and what huts were like?
We were in huts, as far as I remember. It's curious, the gaps in my memory are not where you would expect them to be. I remember much more about the sort of working day with messages about weather in, improbable places in the Balkans, which I'd never heard until then.
So when these messages came to you, were they still in cipher, in code?
Yes, we were given sheets of then foolscap with numbers in groups. And we worked at these, trying to make sense and talking to our friends, whether they, you know, comparing notes at the time. It was all very kind of easy and friendly.
Yeah.
Bennett, the civilian, I don't know what his background might have been. It would be interesting. You would probably find out. But he was very relaxed in his leadership of the hut. And I think I was swimming around in a fairly murky pool, which I didn't understand. I did what I was told. I wasn't even particularly competent at crossword puzzles or things like that.
Did you use your German at all for it?
You needed German, yes, because you were coming across German words and they emerged in the course of the day. And you needed to spot bits of German words and see whether, you know, that this three-letter group, into which words they might fit and which would help in getting the rest of the cipher in.
Do you have any idea where the material that you were dealing with, where it came from, how it reached you? So,
no idea. This has arrived. You know, we knew that it was intercepted. There were sort of rumours went around, you know, like the fact that, I remember the Scharnhorst, the German pocket battleship, as they were called at the time, was intercepted. We knew it was there, and we knew it was on its way, and we were getting messages from it. And I say we, I mean BP, not me personally, and not even, in our hut. But this was a sort of anecdote that was told that we knew exactly where it was. Yeah. So what the RAF was instructed, or however it worked, to send a weather aeroplane, sort of not a fighting plane at all, to where the Scharnhorst was known to be. And it was able to give a pinpoint position, and they were able to sink it eventually.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I was much more interested in the personalities, friends, and entertainment. I took part in one play whilst I was there. I knew I was very much part of something really important. That was quite clear. And I wasn't able to say anything to anybody about this.
And did you have any idea, after you've done your bit of work, did you know what then happened to what you've done? No.
It was very much, this is what you have to do, and that you can forget the rest.
Yeah.
None of your business. It was a policy designed to protect us, really, as much as to protect the information. Because if we had started getting too inquisitive about other things, we might have made mistakes, jumped to conclusions, and generally be a nuisance rather than a help to the general project. Yeah, it was a very interesting time. I think most interesting because of the interesting people I met at the time.
You said you were in a play. Do you remember which one it was?
Yes, it was called Love from a Stranger by a man, I think, called Vosper. I was the stranger.
Okay.
Where did you perform it?
Yeah, I couldn't tell you.
I'm wondering, would it have been on the RAF camp or maybe...
I think it was, yes. Okay. I think it was in the park.
There was the Assembly Hall. Would it have been there, which is quite a big building, which is still there, now privately owned?
I've been back once or twice. I didn't find it.
No.
Okay.
And I'm not at all sure. No. I don't think I can tell you.
When the war with Germany came to an end, did everything just stop?
We got very drunk.
Yeah. Yes, what did you do on VE Day? Yes.
Yeah.
Fell in the lake.
Nice.
along with a great many other people. I don't know whether there was more than one boat, but there was a boat on the lake. And we were allowed, I don't know where we got the beer, but it was a lengthy, prolonged celebration, of course, May 45. Mm. Yes, so several of us fell in, but there you go.
The hut, or the block rather, that where you worked itself, do you remember much about, say, the layout of the office or how the building kind of worked?
I seem to remember very little about it. I'm puzzled why, really. I would expect to have remembered more, but I don't. Yeah. It was a hut. It was not very well insulated, undecorated, no kind of character or personality to it at all. It was just a place of work, an office.
I guess, presumably, your only tools were pencil and paper, were they?
Yeah.
Yes, no machinery.
Yes, absolutely, yes.
So you mentioned recreationally the kind of activities and things that you were doing. So you mentioned the drama group. Was that one of the main ones you were doing? Were you quite heavily involved?
I got involved with this play, which took up quite a lot of time. I mean, for a couple of months or so, I suppose. But I only took part in that one play.
I'm just curious, rehearsals-wise, considering I'm guessing it had people on across the site involved, I mean, did you... Yeah. Was that almost in some kind of staggered shift kind of pattern? Or I just wondered how it...
I can't remember. Could have worked. I don't remember.
Here's one that comes up quite often, oddly, in the interviews. Are people have very firm memories of the food and often... Very negative indeed. So I was just curious if you remember eating on site or anything like that.
No.
That's fair enough.
I'm not very fussy about my food. I enjoy my food and I'm still able to. Mm. But I have no recollection at all. I mean, it was canteen stuff.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't think we got out in the evening. I mean, there were no sort of... Not that I remember, at any rate. There were no sort of gatherings in local pubs in Bletchley. I think there must have been access to drink and alcohol in BP itself, though I can't remember now where that was.
I mean, there was presumed to be a naffy or something.
Yes, a naffy, yes.
And I do know at one stage, Hut 1 on the park was known as the Beer Hut.
Yes.
And Hut 1 is actually still there. And, funny enough, sells ice creams now, but in the summer, yes.
Mm.
Do you have any memories of any of the other, say, big days, so to speak? So do you remember, say, D-Day happening or VJ Day or anything
that? I mean, VE and VJ Day, yes, definitely.
So VE Day, you had the lake.
That's right.
What was VJ Day like in comparison?
Well, it was secondary, very much. Doubtless... People concerned with Japanese material would have celebrated it themselves, but we didn't. It was all German as far as I was concerned. And as I say, German air.
Was there ever a suggestion when the war with Germany ended of you staying there to do Japanese codes at all?
Nobody suggested that I should take any part in it, no.
No, it's just that most people like yourself are either moved on to other things or many of the civilians were discharged pretty quickly. But some were sort of said, well, you're good at languages, you know, you can do Japanese, but obviously they didn't.
Yes, I knew a man who had been at Bletchley in the Japanese unit. I met him as a teacher at Manchester Grammar School, a man called Wynne Davis, W-Y-N-N-E, if I remember, which is a slightly unusual way of spelling it. He and I became very good friends at Manchester Grammar School, and he taught me photography, how to actually, not just to take pictures, but how to develop black and white, as they were then, film. Now, I have definitely got, yes... This is written by Wynne. It's a collection of several letters that he wrote. You can welcome to borrow that.
Wow. We can copy these and send them back to you, yes.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And he had very interesting experiences, some of which are revealed in that document.
Were you then moved away from there fairly soon to another job? Or
Not very soon. I went on, really unbelievably, because they needed to make use of me. I went on to be an interpreter in North Germany. To start with, I went to Neumünster Airfield in Schleswig-Holstein and wasn't there for very long. And I was posted to an air disarmament disposal unit for 40 ADP, I seem to remember, was the actual title of the unit, which was just that. I was involved merely in trying to help communications between the German personnel and the British personnel in the RAF. I was in the RAF there, and as a sergeant, I've got a photograph of the mess we were allocated, which was requisitioned from some wealthy German, who turned out, and we used their nice house as a base, as a sergeant's mess. That was in a place called Bergedorf, which is about 20 or 30 kilometres, if I remember right, south-southwest, I think, of Hamburg. I remember driving through Hamburg when we got there after we'd landed, and then driving through Hamburg to get to Bergedorf. So I must have been there for a bit before this happened, and not seeing a single complete building, not a single one. Driving for 20 minutes and the terrible smell of dead bodies in Hamburg. I was demobbed in 1946, and I had already got a place at Oxford and took it up for the Michaelmas term, 1946.
And what was that to read? What subject?
I read German with subsidiary French, and there met Peter Hilton.
So we were at the same college as him?
Yes, at Queen's.
Queen's, yeah, right, yeah.
Yes, and he introduced me to my wife, in fact. He was a sort of second cousin of my wife's father. And he, in fact, attended my wedding. And we were with his brother, Sydney, who became a professor of physiology in Birmingham. Very bright family, the Hilton family. And as I say, we preserved a close friendship for 50 years or so. But I haven't really seen an awful lot of people who were at Bletchley, but you bump into people from time to time. If somebody mentions Bletchley, you know, it's surprising how often it happened in the end. Mm. Partly because as a head teacher, you tend to circulate with older people. This is, I'm talking about 1960 onwards, and many of whom had been in the services during the war. And the topic of BP came up when I think Winterbottom's book was published in about 1970-something.
Well, that was the first time most people knew about it.
Yes. Exactly, yeah. I never spoke about it until, I mean, Peter Hilton and I, we discussed what we'd done. But I mean, he was a specialist mathematician in a very rarefied area of topology, which is homotopy. And I have somewhere, probably undiscoverable now, a small leaflet. It's about 15 to 20 pages, covered with obscure symbols and diagrams. And he has written on the top of it, "The day that you begin to understand any of this, our friendship will be in serious jeopardy." Well, there was no danger. He eventually went to live in the States, was appointed and finished up as a professor of homotopy at SUNY in Binghamton in New York State. And he used to visit us here on a number of occasions, and before that when we were living in Barnet. And we used to talk about our experiences, of course, and who we knew. He knew all the people whose names you particularly would be familiar with. I mean, he knew a great many of them because he was, I mean, he was headhunted as a very bright, he was at St. Paul's school.
Yes.
Mm. And my wife was at the girls' St. Paul's. They were slightly related, lived in the same block of flats in North London. So he was not only a college friend where we saw a good deal of each other and sank a good many barrels of beer, but also, as I say, a member of the family in a distant sort of way.
Did you get much leave? Were you able to go home at all during your sort of time?
I did get leave because I remember I lived in Bristol and I remember going home and being asked what I did and saying, well, I can't tell you.
Which is my next question, but you answered it already.
Yes. Yes. I told Pat what I did. That was my wife. Yeah. But, you know, I felt at the time that it would be, in a sense, improper and disloyal to suppose that she might reveal anything that I told her.
Yes.
So I told her. But, I mean, what I knew was so unimportant anyway. And as we got married in 1950, and by that time, war had been over 5 years, and people were beginning to... oh, yeah, you were at Bletchley Park. Oh, yes. Yes. You know, and we've heard about that a bit. And then some 20-plus years later, Winterbottom sort of opened the can.
Yeah.
So the fact that you were already talking about it, did it feel particularly shocking when Winterbottom's book came out? Did it feel odd?
Yeah, I mean, we were told that, you know, we'd signed the Official Secrets Act. If we revealed anything, we would quite possibly be imprisoned.
Hmm.
And quite rightly so. Obviously, the country depended critically on the sort of work that we'd been doing, which had become apparent over the time, over the months that I was at BP. I was well aware that in other huts and in the mansion, some very high-level work was going on that was absolutely crucial to our conduct of the war. But, say, a very small drop of oil in this huge machinery.
Before I turn the machines off, just to say thank you very, very much for what's been a very interesting and informative...
Yeah, thank you.
Well, I did warn you that I didn't have much to offer.
So. I definitely think you did.
Thanks to the paid and volunteer staff, visitors and veterans who took part in this podcast. To find out more, go to bletchleypark.org.uk. You can follow Bletchley Park on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. This podcast is produced for the Bletchley Park Trust by MC Fontaine and supported by Audioboom. If you like this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes. Thanks for listening, and we'll have more decrypts from the home of the Codebreakers next month.